This is Audible.
Random House Audio presents Nothing to Lose by Lee Child, read for you by Dick Hill. For Ray Helmsworth and Janine Wilson, They Know Why. Chapter 1. The sun was only half as hot as he had known sun to be, but it was hot enough to keep him confused and dizzy. He was very weak. He had not eaten for 72 hours, or taken water for 48. Not weak. He was dying, and he knew it. The images in his mind showed things drifting away. A rowboat caught in a river current, straining against a rotted rope, pulling, tugging, breaking free. His viewpoint was that of a small boy in the boat, sitting low, staring back helplessly at the bank as the dock grew smaller. Or an airship, swinging gently on a breeze, somehow breaking free of its mast, floating up and away slowly, the boy inside seeing tiny, urgent figures on the ground, waving, staring, their faces tilted upward in concern. Then the images faded, because now words seemed more important than pictures, which was absurd, because he had never been interested in words before. But before he died, he wanted to know which words were his, which applied to him. Was he a man or a boy? He had been described both ways. Be a man, some had said. Others had been insistent, the boy's not to blame. He was old enough to vote and kill and die, which made him a man. He was too young to drink, even beer, which made him a boy. Was he brave or a coward? He had been called both things. He had been called unhinged, disturbed, deranged, unbalanced, delusional, traumatized, all of which he understood and accepted, except unhinged. Was he supposed to be hinged? Like a door? Maybe people were doors. Maybe things passed through them. Maybe they banged in the wind. He considered the question for a long moment, and then he batted the air in frustration. He was babbling like a teenager in love with weed, which is exactly all he had been a year and a half before. He fell to his knees. The sand was only half as hot as he had known sand to be, but it was hot enough to ease his chill. He fell face down, exhausted, finally spent. He knew as certainly as he had ever known anything that if he closed his eyes he would never open them again. But he was very tired, so very, very tired, more tired than a man or a boy had ever been. He closed his eyes. Chapter 2. The line between hope and despair was exactly that, a line in the road, formed where one town's blacktop finished and the others started. Hope's highway department had used thick, dark asphalt rolled smooth. Despair had a smaller municipal budget. That was clear. They had top-dressed a lumpy roadbed with hot tar and dumped gray gravel on it. Where the two surfaces met, there was an inch-wide trench of no-man's land filled with a black, rubbery compound, an expansion joint, a boundary, a line. Jack Reacher stepped over it mid-stride and kept on walking. He paid it no attention at all. But he remembered it later. Later, he was able to recall it in great detail. Hope and despair were both in Colorado. Reacher was in Colorado because 2 days previously he had been in Kansas, and Colorado was next to Kansas. He was making his way west and south. He had been in Calais, Maine, and had taken it into his head to cross the continent diagonally, all the way to San Diego in California. Calais was the last major place in the Northeast, San Diego was the last major place in the Southwest, one extreme to the other. The Atlantic to the Pacific, cool and damp to hot and dry. He took buses where there were any, and hitched rides where there weren't. Where he couldn't find rides, he walked. He had arrived in Hope in the front passenger seat of a bottle-green Mercury Grand Marquis, driven by a retired button salesman. He was on his way out of Hope on foot because that morning there had been no traffic heading west toward Despair. He remembered that fact later, too, and wondered why he hadn't wondered why. In terms of his grand diagonal design, he was slightly off course. Ideally, he should have been angling directly southwest into New Mexico. But he wasn't a stickler for plans, and the Grand Marquis had been a comfortable car, and the old guy had been fixed on Hope, because he had three grandchildren to see there, before heading onward to Denver to see four more. Retread listened patiently to the old guy's family tales, and had figured that a sawtooth itinerary first west and then south was entirely acceptable. Maybe two sides of a triangle would be more entertaining than one. And then in Hope, he had looked at a map and seen Despair, 17 miles farther west, and had been unable to resist the detour. Once or twice in his life, he had made the same trip, metaphorically. Now he figured he should make it for real, since the opportunity was right there in front of him. He remembered that whim later, too. The road between the two towns was a straight two-lane. It rose very gently as it headed west, nothing dramatic. The part of eastern Colorado that Reacher was in was pretty flat, like Kansas. But the Rockies were visible up ahead, blue and massive and hazy. They looked very close. Then suddenly they didn't. Reacher breasted a slight rise and stopped dead, and understood why one town was called Hope and the other Despair. Settlers and homesteaders struggling west 150 years before him would have stopped over in what came to be called Hope, and would have seen their last great obstacle seemingly within touching distance. Then, after a day's or a week's or a month's repose, they would have moved on again and breasted the same slight rise and seen that the Rockies' apparent proximity had been nothing more than a cruel trick of topography, an optical illusion, a trick of the light. From the top of the rise, the Great Barrier seemed once again remote, even unreachably distant, across hundreds more miles of endless plains, maybe thousands more miles, although that, too, was an illusion. Reacher figured that, in truth, the first significant peaks were about 200 miles away. A long month's hard trekking on foot and in mule-drawn carts, across featureless wilderness and along occasional decades-old wheel ruts. Maybe 6 weeks hard trekking in the wrong season. In context, not a disaster, but certainly a bitter disappointment, a blow hard enough to drive the anxious and the impatient from Hope to Despair, in the time between one glance at the horizon and the next. Reacher stepped off Despair's gritty road and walked through crusted sandy earth to a table rock the size of a car. He levered himself up and lay down with his hands behind his head and stared up at the sky. It was pale blue and laced with long, high, feathery clouds that might once have been vapor trails from coast-to-coast red-eye plains. Back when he smoked, he might have lit a cigarette to pass the time. But he didn't smoke anymore. Smoking implied carrying at least a pack and a book of matches, and Reacher had long ago quit carrying things he didn't need. There was nothing in his pockets except paper money and an expired passport, and an ATM card and a clipped-together toothbrush. There was nothing waiting for him anywhere else, either. No storage unit in a distant city. Nothing stashed with friends. He owned the things in his pockets, and the clothes on his back, and the shoes on his feet. That was all. And that was enough. Everything he needed, and nothing he didn't. He got to his feet and stood on tiptoe, high on the rock. Behind him, to the east, was a shallow bowl, maybe 10 miles in diameter, with the town of Hope roughly in its center, 8 or 9 miles back, maybe 10 blocks by 6 of brick-built buildings, and an outlying clutter of houses and farms and barns and other structures made of wood and corrugated metal. Together they made a warm, low smudge in the haze. Ahead of him to the west were tens of thousands of flat square miles, completely empty except for ribbons of distant roads, and the town of Despair, about 8 or 9 miles ahead. Despair was harder to see than Hope. The haze was thicker in the west. The place looked larger than Hope had been, and teardrop-shaped, with a conventional plains downtown, mostly south of the main drag, and then a wider zone of activity beyond it, maybe industrial in nature, hence the smog. Despair looked less pleasant than Hope. Cold, where Hope had looked warm, gray, where Hope had been mellow. It looked unwelcoming. For a brief moment, Reacher considered backtracking and striking out south from Hope itself, getting back on course, but he dismissed the thought even before it had fully formed. Reacher hated turning back. He liked to press on, dead ahead. Whatever. Everyone's life needed an organizing principle, and relentless forward motion was Reacher's. He was angry at himself later for being so inflexible. He climbed off the rock and rejoined the road 20 yards west of where he had left it. He stepped up onto the left-hand edge and continued walking. Long strides, an easy pace, a little faster than 3 miles an hour, facing oncoming traffic the safest way. But there was no oncoming traffic. No traffic in either direction. The road was deserted. No vehicles were using it. No cars, no trucks, nothing. No chance of a ride. Reacher was a little puzzled, but mostly unconcerned. Many times in his life he had walked a lot more than 17 miles at a stretch. He raked the hair off his forehead and pulled his shirt loose on his shoulders and kept on going, toward whatever lay ahead. Chapter 3 Despair's downtown area began with a vacant lot where something had been planned maybe 20 years before, but never built. Then came an old motor court, shuttered, maybe permanently abandoned. Across the street and 50 yards west was a gas station. 2 pumps, both of them old. Not the kind of upright rural antiques Reacher had seen in Edward Hopper's paintings, but still a couple of generations off the pace. There was a small hut in back with a grimy window full of quarts of oil arrayed in a pyramid. Reacher crossed the apron and stuck his head in the door. It was dark inside the hut, and the air smelled of creosote and hot, raw wood. There was a guy behind a counter, in worn blue overalls stained black with dirt. He was about 30, and lean. "Got coffee?" Reacher asked him.
"This is a gas station," the guy said.
"Gas stations sell coffee," Reacher said, "and water, and soda."
"Not this one," the guy said. "We sell gas."
"And oil?"
"If you want it."
"Is there a coffee shop in town?"
"There's a restaurant."
"Just one?"
"One is all we need."
Reacher ducked back out to the daylight and kept on walking. 100 yards farther west, the road grew sidewalks, and according to a sign on a pole, changed its name to Main Street. 30 feet later came the first developed block. It was occupied by a Dewar brick cube, 3 stories high, on the left side of the street, to the south. It might once have been a dry goods emporium. It was still some kind of a retail enterprise. Reacher could see 3 customers and bolts of cloth and plastic household items through its dusty ground floor windows. Next to it was an identical 3-story brick cube, and then another, and another. The downtown area seemed to be about 12 blocks square, bulked mostly to the south of Main Street. Reacher was no kind of an architectural expert, and he knew he was way west of the Mississippi, but the whole place gave him the feel of an old Connecticut factory town, or the Cincinnati riverfront. It was plain and severe and unadorned and out of date. He had seen movies about small-town America in which the sets had been artfully dressed to look a little more perfect and vibrant than reality. This place was the exact opposite. It looked like a designer and a whole team of grips had worked hard to make it dowdier and gloomier than it needed to be. Traffic on the streets was light. Sedans and pickup trucks were moving, slow and lazy. None of them was newer than 3 years old. There were few pedestrians on the sidewalks. Reacher made a random left turn and set about finding the promised restaurant. He quartered a dozen blocks and passed a grocery store and a barber shop and a bar and a rooming house and a faded old hotel before he found the eatery. It took up the whole ground floor of another dull brick cube. The ceiling was high, and the windows were floor-to-ceiling plate-glass items filling most of the walls. The place might have been an automobile showroom in the past. The floor was tiled, and the tables and chairs were plain brown wood, and the air smelled of boiled vegetables. There was a register station inside the door, with a "Please Wait to Be Seated" sign on a short brassed pole with a heavy base. Same sign he had seen everywhere, coast to coast. Same script, same colors, same shape. He figured there was a catering supply company, somewhere, turning them out by the millions. He had seen identical signs in Calais, Maine, and expected to see more in San Diego, California. He stood next to the register and waited. And waited. There were 11 customers eating. 3 couples, a threesome, and 2 singletons. 1 waitress. No front-of-house staff, nobody at the register. Not an unusual ratio. Reacher had eaten in 1,000 similar places, and he knew the rhythm subliminally. The lone waitress would soon glance over at him and nod, as if to say, "I'll be right with you." Then she would take an order, deliver a plate, and scoot over, maybe blowing an errant strand of hair off her cheek, in a gesture designed to be both an apology and an appeal for sympathy. She would collect a menu from a stack and lead him to a table and bustle away and then revisit him in strict sequence. But she didn't do any of that. She glanced over, didn't nod, just looked at him for a long second and then looked away, carried on with what she was doing, which by that point wasn't much. She had all her 11 customers pacified. She was just making work. She was stopping by tables and asking if everything was all right, and refilling coffee cups that were less than an inch down from the rim. Reacher turned and checked the door glass to see if he had missed an opening hours sign, to see if the place was about to close up. It wasn't. He checked his reflection to see if he was committing a social outrage with the way he was dressed. He wasn't. He was wearing dark gray pants and a matching dark gray shirt, both bought 2 days before in a janitorial surplus store in Kansas. Janitorial supply stores were his latest discovery. Plain, strong, well-made clothing at reasonable prices. Perfect. His hair was short and tidy. He had shaved the previous morning. His fly was zipped. He turned back to wait. Customers turned to look at him, one after the other. They appraised him quite openly and then looked away. The waitress made another slow circuit of the room, looking everywhere except at him. He stood still, running the situation through a mental database and trying to understand it. Then he lost patience with it and stepped past the sign and moved into the room and sat down alone at a table for 4. He scraped his chair in and made himself comfortable. The waitress watched him do it, and then she headed for the kitchen. She didn't come out again. Reacher sat and waited. The room was silent. No talking. No sounds at all, except for the quiet, metallic clash of silverware on plates and the smack of people chewing, and the ceramic click of cups being lowered carefully into saucers and the wooden creak of chair legs under shifting bodies, those tiny noises rose up and echoed around the vast tiled space until they seemed overwhelmingly loud. Nothing happened for close to 10 minutes. Then an old crew cab pickup truck slid to a stop on the curb outside the door. There was a second's pause, and four guys climbed out and stood together on the sidewalk outside the restaurant's door. They grouped themselves into a tight little formation and paused another beat and came inside. They paused again and scanned the room and found their target. They headed straight for Reacher's table. Three of them sat down in the empty chairs, and the fourth stood at the head of the table, blocking Reacher's exit. Chapter 4 The four guys were each a useful size. The shortest was probably an inch under 6 feet, and the lightest was maybe an ounce over 200 pounds. They all had walnut knuckles and thick wrists and knotted forearms. Two of them had broken noses, and none of them had all their teeth. They all looked pale and vaguely unhealthy. They were all grimy, with ingrained gray dirt in the folds of their skin that glittered and shone like metal. They were all dressed in canvas work shirts with their sleeves rolled to their elbows. They were all somewhere between 30 and 40, and they all looked like trouble.
"I don't want company," Reacher said. "I prefer to eat alone."
The guy standing at the head of the table was the biggest of the four, by maybe an inch and 10 pounds. He said,
"You're not going to eat at all."
Reacher said,
"I'm not." "Not here, anyway."
"I heard this was the only show in town."
"It is."
"Well, then."
"You need to get going."
"Going?"
"Out of here."
"Out of where?"
"Out of this restaurant."
"You want to tell me why?"
"We don't like strangers."
"Me either," Reacher said. "But I need to eat somewhere. Otherwise, I'll get all wasted and skinny, like you four."
"Oh, funny man."
"Just calling it like it is," Reacher said.
He put his forearms on the table. He had 30 pounds and 3 inches on the big guy and more than that on the other three, and he was willing to bet he had a little more experience and a little less inhibition than any one of them, or than all of them put together. But ultimately, if it came to it, it was going to be his 250 pounds against their cumulative 900. Not great odds. But Reacher hated turning back. The guy who was standing said,
"We don't want you here."
Reacher said,
"You're confusing me with someone who gives a shit what you want."
"You won't get served in here."
"You could order for me."
"And then what?"
"Then I could eat your lunch."
"Funny man," the guy said again. "You need to leave now."
"Why?"
"Just leave now."
Reacher asked,
"You guys got names?"
"Not for you to know, and you need to leave."
"You want me to leave? I'll need to hear it from the owner, not from you."
"We can arrange that."
The guy who was standing nodded to one of the guys in the seats, who scraped his chair back and got up and headed for the kitchen. A long minute later, he came back out with a man in a stained apron. The man in the apron was wiping his hands on a dish towel and didn't look particularly worried or perturbed. He walked up to Reacher's table and said,
"I want you to leave my restaurant."
"Why?"
"I don't need to explain myself."
"You the owner?"
"Yes, I am."
Reacher said, "I'll leave when I've had a cup of coffee."
"You'll leave now."
"Black, no sugar."
"I don't want trouble."
"You already got trouble."
If I get a cup of coffee, I'll walk out of here. If I don't get a cup of coffee, these guys can try to throw me out, and you'll spend the rest of the day cleaning blood off the floor and all day tomorrow shopping for new chairs and tables. The guy in the apron said nothing. Reacher said, "Black. No sugar." The guy in the apron stood still for a long moment and then headed back into the kitchen. A minute later, the waitress came out with a single cup balanced on a saucer. She carried it across the room and set it down in front of Reacher, hard enough to slop some of the contents out of the cup and into the saucer.
"Enjoy," she said.
Reacher lifted the cup and wiped the base on his sleeve, set the cup down on the table and emptied the saucer into it, set the cup back on the saucer and squared it in front of him. Then he raised it again and took a sip. "Not bad," he thought. "A little weak, a little stewed, but at heart it was a decent commercial product. Better than most diners, worse than most franchise places. Right in the middle of the curve." The cup was a porcelain monstrosity with a lip about 3/8 of an inch thick. It was cooling the drink too fast. Too wide, too shallow, too much mass. Reacher was no big fan of fine china, but he believed a receptacle ought to serve its contents. The four guys were still clustered all around, two sitting, two standing now. Reacher ignored them and drank, slowly at first, and then faster as the coffee grew cold. He drained the cup and set it back on the saucer, pushed it away slowly and carefully until it was exactly centered on the table. Then he moved his left arm fast and went for his pocket. The four guys jumped. Reacher came out with a dollar bill and flattened it and trapped it under the saucer. "So let's go," he said. The guy standing at the head of the table moved out of the way. Reacher scraped his chair back and stood up. 11 customers watched him do it. He pushed his chair in neatly and stepped around the head of the table and headed for the door. He sensed the four guys behind him, heard their boots on the tile. They were forming up in single file, threading between tables, stepping past the sign and the register. The room was silent. Reacher pushed the door and stepped outside to the street. The air was cool, but the sun was out. The sidewalk was concrete, cast in 5x5 squares. The squares were separated by inch-wide expansion joints. The joints were filled with black compound. Reacher turned left and took 4 steps until he was clear of the parked pickup, and then he stopped and turned back with the afternoon sun behind him. The four guys formed up in front of him, with the sun in their eyes. The guy who had stood at the head of the table said,
"Now you need to get out,"
Reacher said. "I am out."
"Out of town."
Reacher said nothing. The guy said,
"Make a left, and then Main Street is 4 blocks up. When you get there, turn either left or right, west or east. We don't care which, just keep on walking."
Reacher asked,
"You still do that here?"
"Do what?"
"Run people out of town?"
"You bet we do." "You want to tell me why you do?"
"We don't have to tell you why we do."
Reacher said, "I just got here."
"So?"
"So, I'm staying." The guy on the end of the line pushed his rolled cuffs above his elbows and took a step forward. Broken nose, missing teeth. Reacher glanced at the guy's wrists. The width of a person's wrists was the only fail-safe indicator of a person's raw strength. This guy's were wider than a long-stemmed rose, narrower than a 2x4, closer to the 2x4 than the rose. Reacher said,
"You're picking on the wrong man."
The guy, who had been doing all the talking, said,
"You think?"
Reacher nodded. "I have to warn you. I promised my mother a long time ago. She said I had to give folks a chance to walk away."
"You a mama's boy?"
She liked to see fair play.
"There are 4 of us. one of you.
Reacher's hands were down by his sides, relaxed, gently curled. His feet were apart, securely planted. He could feel the hard concrete through the soles of his shoes. It was textured. It had been brushed with a yard broom just before it dried, 10 years earlier. He folded the fingers of his left hand flat against his palm, raised the hand very slowly, brought it level with his shoulder, palm out. The four guys stared at it. The way his fingers were folded made them think he was hiding something. But what? He snapped his fingers open. Nothing there. In the same split second, he moved sideways and heaved his right fist up like a convulsion and caught the guy who had stepped forward with a colossal uppercut to the jaw. The guy had been breathing through his mouth because of his broken nose, and the massive impact snapped his jaw shut and lifted him up off the ground and dumped him back down in a vertical heap on the sidewalk, like a puppet with the strings cut, unconscious before he got halfway there. "Now there are only three of you," Reacher said. "Still one of me." They weren't total amateurs. They reacted pretty well, and pretty fast. They sprang back and apart into a wide, defensive semicircle and crouched, fists ready. Reacher said, "You can still walk away." The guy who had been doing the talking said, "You got lucky. Only suckers get sucker punched. Won't happen twice." Reacher said nothing. The guy said, "Get out of town. You can't take us 3-on-1. Try me. Can't be done. Not now." Reacher nodded. "Maybe you're right. Maybe one of you will stay on your feet long enough to get to me." "Oh, you can count on it. But the question you need to ask is, which one of you will it be? Right now, you've got no way of knowing. One of you will be driving the other three to the hospital for a 6-month stay. You want me out of town bad enough to take those odds?" Nobody spoke. Stalemate. Reacher rehearsed his next moves. A right-footed kick to the groin of the guy on his left, spin back with an elbow to the head for the guy in the middle, duck under the inevitable roundhouse swing incoming from the guy on the right, let him follow through, put an elbow in his kidney. 1, 2, 3, no fundamental problem. Maybe a little cleanup afterward. More feet than elbows. Main difficulty would be limiting the damage. Careful restraint would be required. It was always wiser to stay on the right side of the line, closer to brawling than homicide. In the distance beyond the three guys, Reacher could see people going about their lawful business on the sidewalks. He could see cars and trucks driving slow on the streets, pausing at four-way stops, moving on. Then he saw one particular car blow straight through a four-way and head in his direction. A Crown Victoria, white and gold, black push bars on the front, a light bar on the roof, antennas on the trunk lid, a shield on the door with DPD scrolled across it. Despair Police Department. A heavy-set cop in a tan jacket visible behind the glass. "Behind you," Reacher said. "The cavalry is here." But he didn't move, and he kept his eyes on the three guys. The cop's arrival didn't necessarily guarantee anything. Not yet. The three guys looked mad enough to move straight from a verbal warning to an actual assault charge. Maybe they already had so many they figured one more wouldn't make any difference. Small towns. In Reacher's experience, they all had a lunatic fringe. The Crown Vic braked hard in the gutter. The doors swung open. The driver took a riot gun from a holster between the seats, climbed out, pumped the gun, and held it diagonally across his chest. He was a big guy. White, maybe 40, black hair, wide neck, tan jacket, brown pants, black shoes. A groove in his forehead from a Smokey the Bear hat that was presumably now resting on his passenger seat. He stood behind the three guys and looked around, surveyed the scene. Not exactly rocket science, Reacher thought. Three guys surrounding a fourth? We're not discussing the weather here.
The cop said, "Back off, now."
Deep voice. Authoritative. The three guys stepped backward. The cop stepped forward. They swapped their relative positions. Now the three guys were behind the cop. The cop moved his gun, pointed it straight at Reacher's chest. "You're under arrest."
Chapter 5. Reacher stood still and asked, "On what charge?"
The cop said, "I'm sure I'll think of something."
He swapped the gun into one hand and used the other to take the handcuffs out of the holder on his belt. He held them on the flat of his palm, and one of the guys behind him stepped forward and took them from him and looped around behind Reacher's back.
"Put your arms behind you," the cop said.
"Are these guys deputized?" Reacher asked.
"Why would you care?"
"I don't, but they should. They put their hands on me without a good reason. They get their arms broken."
"They're all deputized," the cop said. "Especially including the one you just laid out."
He put both hands back on his gun.
"Self-defense," Reacher said. "Save it for the judge," the cop said.
The guy behind him pulled Reacher's arms back and cuffed his wrists. The guy who had done all the talking opened the cruiser's rear door and stood there holding it like a hotel doorman with a taxicab.
"Get in the car," the cop said.
Reacher stood still and considered his options. Didn't take him long. He didn't have any options. He was handcuffed. He had a guy about 3 feet behind him. He had a cop about 8 feet in front of him. Two more guys 3 feet behind the cop. The riot gun was some kind of a Mossberg. He didn't recognize the model, but he respected the brand.
"In the car."
Reacher moved forward and looped around the open door and jacked himself inside, butt first. The seat was covered in heavy vinyl, and he slid across it easily. The floor was covered in pimpled rubber. The security screen was clear, bulletproof plastic. He braced his feet, one in the left footwell and one in the right. Uncomfortable, with his hands cuffed behind him, he figured he was going to get bounced around. The cop got back in the front. The suspension yielded to his weight. He reholstered the Mossberg, slammed his door, and put the transmission in drive and stamped on the gas. Reacher was thrown back against the cushion. Then the guy braked hard for a stop sign, and Reacher was tossed forward. He twisted as he went and took the blow against the plastic screen with his shoulder. The cop repeated the procedure at the next four-way, and the next. But Reacher was okay with it. It was to be expected. He had driven the same way in the past, in the days when he was the guy in the front and someone else was the guy in the back. And it was a small town. Wherever the police station was, it couldn't be far. The police station was 4 blocks west and 2 blocks south of the restaurant. It was housed in another undistinguished brick building on a street wide enough to let the cop park nose into the curb on a diagonal. There was one other car there. That was all. Small town, small police department. The building had 2 stories. The cops had the ground floor, the town court was upstairs. Reacher guessed there were cells in the basement. His trip to the booking desk was uneventful. He didn't make trouble, no point. No percentage in being a fugitive on foot in a town where the line was 12 miles away in one direction and maybe more in the other. The desk was manned by a patrolman who could have been the arresting officer's kid brother. Same size and shape, same face, same hair, a little younger. Reacher was uncuffed and gave up the stuff from his pockets and his shoelaces. He had no belt. He was escorted down a winding stair and put in a 6x8 cell, fronted by ancient ironwork that had been painted maybe 50 times.
"Lawyer?" he asked. "You know any?" the desk guy asked back.
"The public defender will do." The desk guy nodded and locked the gate and walked away. Reacher was left on his own. The cell block was otherwise empty. 3 cells in a line, a narrow corridor, no windows. Each cell had a wall-mounted iron tray for a bed and a steel toilet with a sink built into the top of the tank. Bulkhead lights burned behind wire grills on the ceilings. Reacher ran his right hand under cold water at the sink and massaged his knuckles. They were sore, but not damaged. He lay down on the cot and closed his eyes.
Welcome to despair, he thought.
Chapter 6. The public defender never showed. Reacher dozed for 2 hours, and then the cop who had arrested him clattered down the stairs and unlocked the cell and gestured for him to get up.
The judge is ready for you.
Reacher yawned.
I haven't seen my lawyer.
Take it up with the court, the cop said. Not with me.
What kind of a half-assed system have you got here?
The same kind we've always had.
I think I'll stay down here.
I could send your three remaining buddies in for a visit.
Save gas and send them straight to the hospital.
I could put you in handcuffs first, strap you to the bed.
All by yourself?
I could bring a stun gun.
You live here in town?
Why?
Maybe I'll come visit you one day.
I don't think you will.
The cop stood there waiting. Reacher shrugged to himself and swung his feet to the floor, pushed himself upright and stepped out of the cell. Walking was awkward without his shoelaces. On the stairs he had to hook his toes to stop his shoes falling off altogether. He shuffled past the booking desk and followed the cop up another flight, a grander staircase. At the top was a wooden double door, closed. Alongside it was a sign on a short post with a heavy base. Same kind of thing as the restaurant sign, except this one said, Town Court. The cop opened the left-hand panel and stood aside. Reacher stepped into a courtroom. There was a center aisle and four rows of spectator seating, then a bullpen rail and a prosecution table and a defense table, each with three wheel-back chairs. There was a witness stand and a jury box and a judge's dais. All the furniture and all the structures were made out of pine, lacquered dark and then darkened more by age and polish. The walls were paneled with the same stuff. There were flags behind the dais, Old Glory, and something Reacher guessed was the state flag of Colorado. The room was empty. It echoed and smelled of dust. The cop walked ahead and opened the bullpen gate, pointed Reacher toward the defense table. The cop sat down at the prosecution table. They waited. Then an inconspicuous door in the back wall opened and a man in a suit walked in. The cop jumped up and said, "All rise!" Reacher stayed in his seat. The man in the suit clumped up three steps and slid in behind the dais. He was bulky and somewhere over 60, and had a full head of white hair. His suit was cheap and badly cut. He picked up a pen and straightened a legal pad in front of him. He looked at Reacher and said, "Name?"
"I haven't been Mirandized," Reacher said.
"You haven't been charged with a crime,"
the old guy said.
"This isn't a trial."
"So what is it?"
"A hearing."
"About what?"
"It's an administrative matter, that's all. Possibly just a technicality, but I do need to ask you some questions."
Reacher said nothing.
The guy asked, "Name?"
"I'm sure the police department copied my passport and showed it to you." "For the record, please."
The guy's tone was neutral, and his manner was reasonably courteous, so Reacher shrugged and said,
"Jack Reacher, no middle initial."
The guy wrote it down, followed up with his date of birth and his social security number and his nationality. Then he asked,
"Address?"
Reacher said, "No fixed address." The guy wrote it down.
"Occupation?"
"None."
"Purpose of your visit to despair?"
"Tourism."
"How do you propose to support yourself during your visit?"
"I hadn't really thought about it. I didn't anticipate a major problem. This isn't exactly London or Paris or New York City."
"Please answer the question,"
I have a bank balance, Reacher said. The guy wrote it all down. Then he sniffed and skipped his pen back over the lines he had already completed and paused. Asked, "What was your last address?"
"An APO box."
"APO? Army Post Office."
"You're a veteran?"
"Yes, I am."
"How long did you serve?"
13 years.
"Until..." "I mustered out 10 years ago."
"Unit?"
"Military police."
"Final rank?"
"Major."
"And you haven't had a permanent address since you left the Army?"
"No, I haven't."
The guy made a pronounced check mark against one of his lines. Reacher saw his pen move 4 times, twice in one direction and twice in the other. Then the guy asked,
"How long have you been out of work?"
10 years.
"You haven't worked since you left the Army?"
"Not really."
"A retired major couldn't find a job?"
"This retired major didn't want to find a job."
"Yet you have a bank balance."
"Savings. Plus occasional casual labor."
The guy made another big check mark.
2 vertical scratches, 2 horizontal. Then he asked,
"Where did you stay last night?"
"In Hope," Reacher said. "In a motel."
"And your bags are still there?"
"I don't have any bags."
The guy made another check mark.
"You walked here?"
"Yes," Reacher said.
"Why?"
"No buses, and I didn't find a ride."
"No, why here?"
"Tourism," Reacher said again.
"What had you heard about our little town?"
"Nothing at all."
"Yet you decided to visit?"
"Evidently."
"Why?"
"I found the name intriguing."
"That's not a very compelling reason."
"I have to be somewhere."
"And thanks for the big welcome." The guy made a 4th big check mark. 2 vertical lines, 2 horizontal. Then he skipped his pen down his list slowly and methodically. 14 answers plus 4 diversions to the margin for the check marks. He said,
"I'm sorry, but I find you to be in contravention of one of Despair's town ordinances. I'm afraid you'll have to leave."
"Leave?"
"Leave town."
"What ordinance?"
"Vagrancy," the guy said.
Chapter 7. Reacher said, "There's a vagrancy ordinance here?" The judge nodded and said,
"As there is in most Western towns."
"I never came across one before."
"Then you've been very lucky."
"I'm not a vagrant."
"Homeless for 10 years, jobless for 10 years, you ride buses or beg rides or walk from place to place, performing occasional casual labor, what else would you call yourself?"
"Free," Reacher said, "and lucky." The judge nodded again and said,
"I'm glad you see a silver lining."
"What about my First Amendment right of free assembly?"
"The Supreme Court ruled long ago. Municipalities have the right to exclude undesirables."
"Tourists are undesirable? What does the Chamber of Commerce think about that?"
"This is a quiet, old-fashioned town. People don't lock their doors. We don't feel the need. Most of the keys were lost years ago, in our grandparents' time."
"I'm not a thief."
"But we err on the side of caution. Experience elsewhere shows that the itinerant jobless have always been a problem."
"Suppose I don't go. What's the penalty?"
30 days imprisonment."
Reacher said nothing. The judge said,
The officer will drive you to the town line. Get a job and a home, and we'll welcome you back with open arms. But don't come back until you do."
The cop took him downstairs again and gave him back his cash and his passport and his ATM card and his toothbrush. Nothing was missing. Everything was there. Then the cop handed over his shoelaces and waited at the booking desk while he threaded them through the eyelets in his shoes
and pulled them tight and tied them off. Then the cop put his hand on the butt of his gun and said, "Car." Reacher walked ahead of him through the lobby and stepped out the street door. It was late in the day, late in the year, and it was getting dark. The cop had moved his cruiser. Now it was parked, nose out. "In the back," the cop said. Reacher heard a plane in the sky, far to the west. A single engine, climbing hard. A Cessna, or a Beech, or a Piper. Small and lonely in the vastness. He pulled the car door and slid inside. Without handcuffs, he was a lot more comfortable. He sprawled sideways, like he would in a taxi or a town car. The cop leaned in after him, one hand on the roof and one on the door, and said, "We're serious. You come back, we'll arrest you, and you'll spend 30 days in that same cell. Always assuming you don't look at us cross-eyed and we shoot you for resisting." "You married?" Reacher asked. "Why?" "I thought not. You seem to prefer jerking off." The cop stood still for a long moment, and then slammed the door and got in the front. He took off down the street and headed north. 6 blocks to Main Street, Reacher figured. If he turns left, takes me onward to the west, maybe I'll let it go. But if he turns right, takes me back east to Hope, maybe I won't. Reacher hated turning back. Forward motion was his organizing principle. 6 blocks, 6 stop signs. At each one, the cop braked gently and slowed and looked left and looked right and then rolled forward. At Main Street, he came to a complete halt. He paused. Then he hit the gas and nosed forward and swung the wheel and turned right. East. Back toward Hope. Chapter 8. Reacher saw the dry goods emporium, and the gas station, and the abandoned motor court, and the vacant unbuilt lot slide by, and then the cop accelerated to a steady 60 miles an hour. The tires rumbled over the rough road, and stray pebbles spattered the underside and bounced and skittered away to the shoulders. 12 minutes later, the car slowed and coasted and braked and came to a stop. The cop climbed out and put his hand on the butt of his gun and opened Reacher's door. "Out," he said. Reacher slid out and felt despair's grit under his shoes. The cop jerked his thumb to the east, where it was darker. "That way." Reacher stood still. The cop took the gun off his belt. It was a Glock 9mm, boxy and dull in the gloom. No safety catch, just a latch on the trigger, already compressed by the cop's meaty forefinger. "Please," the cop said, "just give me a reason." Reacher stepped forward 3 paces, saw the moon rising on the far horizon, saw the end of despair's rough gravel and the start of hope's smooth blacktop, saw the inch-wide trench between, filled with black compound. The car was stopped with its pushbars directly above it. The expansion joint, the boundary, the line. Reacher shrugged and stepped over it. 1 long pace back to Hope. The cop called, "Don't bother us again." Reacher didn't reply, didn't turn around, just stood and faced east and listened as the car backed up and turned and crunched away across the stones. When the sound was all gone in the distance, he shrugged again and started walking. He walked less than 20 yards and saw headlights a mile away coming straight at him out of Hope. The beams were widely spaced, bouncing high, dipping low, a big car, moving fast. It came at him out of the gathering darkness, and when it was 100 yards away, he saw it was another cop car, another Crown Vic, painted black and white, police spec, with push bars, lights and antennas. It stopped short of him, and a spotlight mounted on the windshield pillar lit up and swiveled jerkily and played its beam all the way up and down him twice, coming to rest on his face, blinding him.
Then it clicked off again, and the car crept forward, tires hissing on the smooth asphalt surface, and stopped again with the driver's door exactly alongside him. The door had a gold shield painted on it with HPD scrolled across the middle. Hope Police Department. The window buzzed down, and a hand went up, and a dome light came on inside. Reacher saw a woman cop at the wheel, short blonde hair, backlit by the weak yellow bulb above and behind her.
"Want a ride?" she asked.
"I'll walk," Reacher said.
"It's 5 miles to town."
"I walked out here. I can walk back."
"Riding is easier."
"I'm okay."
The woman was quiet for a moment. Reacher listened to the Crown Vic's engine. It was idling patiently. Belts were turning. A muffler was ticking as it cooled. Then Reacher moved on. He took 3 steps and heard the car's transmission go into reverse, and then the car came alongside him again, driving backward, keeping pace as he walked. The window was still down. The woman said,
"Give yourself a break, Zeno."
Reacher stopped, said,
"You know who Zeno was?"
The car stopped.
"Zeno of Sicium," the woman said, "the founder of Stoicism? I'm telling you to stop being so long-suffering."
"Stoics have to be long-suffering. Stoicism is about the unquestioning acceptance of destinies. Zeno said so."
"Your destiny is to return to hope.
Doesn't matter to Zeno whether you walk or ride."
"What are you, anyway? A philosopher? Or a cop? Or a cab driver?"
"The despair PD calls us when they're dumping someone at the line, as a courtesy."
"This happens a lot?"
"More than you'd think."
"And you come on out and pick us up?"
"We're here to serve. Says so on the badge."
Reacher looked down at the shield on her door. HPD was written across the scroll in the center, but "To Protect" was written at the top of the escutcheon with "And Serve" added at the bottom.
"I see.
So get in."
"Why do they do it?"
"Get in and I'll tell you."
"You going to refuse to let me walk?"
"It's 5 miles.
You're grumpy now. You'll be real cranky when you arrive in town.
Believe me, we've seen it before. Better for all of us if you ride."
"I'm different. Walking calms me down."
The woman said,
"I'm not going to beg, Reacher."
"You know my name?"
"Despair PD passed it on, as a courtesy."
"And a warning?"
"Maybe.
Right now I'm trying to decide whether to take them seriously."
Reacher shrugged again and put his hand on the rear door handle.
"Up front, you idiot," the woman said. "I'm helping you, not arresting you."
So Reacher looped around the trunk and opened the front passenger door. The seat was all hemmed in with radio consoles and a laptop terminal on a bracket, but the space was clear. No hat. He crammed himself in. Not much leg room because of the security screen behind him. Up front, the car smelled of oil and coffee and perfume and warm electronics. The laptop screen showed a GPS map. A small arrow was pointing west and blinking away at the far edge of a pink shape labeled Hope Township. The shape was precisely rectangular, almost square. A fast and arbitrary land allocation, like the state of Colorado itself. Next to it, Despair Township was represented by a light purple shape. Despair was not rectangular. It was shaped like a blunt wedge. Its eastern border matched Hope's western limit exactly. Then it spread wider, like a triangle with the point cut off. Its western line was twice as long as its eastern and bordered gray emptiness. Unincorporated land, Reacher figured. Spurs came off I-70 and I-25 and ran through the unincorporated land and clipped Despair's northwestern corner. The woman cop buzzed her window back up and craned her neck, and glanced behind her and K-turned across the road. She was slightly built under a crisp tan shirt, probably less than 5 feet 6, probably less than 120 pounds, probably less than